Good morning.
Good morning.
Glad to have you all here this morning. If you are in an echoey chamber this morning, if you're visiting with us, we're glad that you're here. Hope you'll come back and visit with us again. 16 years ago this past Friday, I decided to celebrate the day after the Honecker's anniversary and Larry's birthday by marrying my wife. And if you have not learned this about me already, you're not paying attention, but I have married way, way up. Or as some like to say, I've outkicked my coverage. But it has been a very, very good 16 years, a 16 years that a lot of days I still wake up or at some point during the course of the day think to myself, how did I pull this off? How did I manage to make this happen? But I feel very, very blessed with life, and I will come back to that in a minute. I just wanted to set it up early. This past Wednesday evening, the stairway out here was covered in whatever it was covered in, wood or particle board or whatever that stuff is. As the carpets had been ripped up and were preparing for carpet to come in on Friday, I believe, and someone had the great idea, why don't we put our stamp here, as it were, on this stairway. And so several folks that were here on Wednesday night spent a little bit of time putting scriptures and thoughts and things about the church and stuff on those stairs. And I thought that was pretty cool. In our own family, we redid our kitchen shortly before we moved here. In the great tradition of Americans who like to fix things up and never enjoy them, we redid the kitchen, sold the house. But we put our countertops in, we turned them over first, and had each person in the family write a favorite scripture on it. So someday, 20 years from now, when those things are out of style and they rip them out, maybe someone will be converted from our countertops, but who knows. But anyhow, we did the same thing, so I thought it was cool to do it on the stairs. So the next time you're climbing the brand new carpeted stairs, and everything is nice and shiny and new, remember you're climbing on a good foundation, or maybe climbing the stairway to heaven, if you like Led Zeppelin. Thank you, Karina, for taking the pictures of that. I know it's hard to make it out on here, but it was kind of a neat thing to do. Next, to remind you again, we have Christmas caroling this afternoon. If you will show up here around 2 o'clock, we will go out and have songs printed out for you and all that. I'm assuming that's what we did last time. And all that stuff, and we'll go out to assisted living places and other places where we can hopefully raise some spirits and be a part of caroling. Also, check in if you're with one of the life groups. Check in with your life group as to what you're doing tonight, if you're still meeting or not meeting. Some of them are, some of them are not, I think. But plan to be a part of something this evening, this afternoon, to do good things for God. Next, I promise I'm almost done. If you were here in October, or if you weren't, you can reminisce with me because I've eaten all this at this point. October, I came in one Sunday morning and people just started handing me stuff. And I thought, this is kind of cool, we should do this more often. But apparently it was Minister's Appreciation Day and I didn't know that was a thing, but it's a thing and a great idea by whoever thought of that. And I got all these candies and goodies and stuff. This is a representation of some of it. I will tell you, whoever did the Starbucks card, yours were the first to go because I like my coffee. But got a lot of good stuff, and we're just very appreciated that day, so mission accomplished. And somewhere between then and now, my wife got this great idea, which is why I mentioned having married way up earlier, that, you know, you guys have been pretty good to us over the last year and a half or so. We feel very appreciated. We feel very blessed to be here. We picked up and uprooted and came across the country and have not regretted that. It has been a wonderful place to be, and we love you guys more than you know. And so my wife had this idea of, why don't we have Church Appreciation Day? So today is Church Appreciation Day, and we're going to show that in a few ways. First of all, I'm going to preach a little short this morning. Now, some of you are already on board, and you think, this is the best idea. This was worth the Starbucks card. It was worth the Junior Mints. But my plan is to preach a little short this morning. We'll see if that actually comes to pass. Secondly, though, my wife, and again, she's having surgery on Tuesday. She's grading finals today and tomorrow. And yesterday, she spent the entire day in our kitchen making you cookies. And so my apartment smells delightful, by the way. But there will be, in the foyer when you leave today, more cookies than you can shake a stick at out there on a table. And come by and visit and have a couple cookies and just know that you are appreciated. Know that we feel blessed to be with you. Know that we love being a part of this family. And so it's Church Appreciation Day. Don't tie me down to the date because I'll forget what it was next year. But anyway, it's around my anniversary. I guess I'll try to remember it that way. So if you want to turn over to James chapter 2. James chapter 2. Where, ironically enough, we're talking this morning about who's your favorite. James chapter 2. Now, next week, if you've been here, you've noticed we've been working our way through James. Next week would put us at a section on faith and deeds. And for whatever reason, we tend to have a lot of people come on the Sunday around Christmas. And I don't want to tell a whole lot of guests that morning that they need to do what they say they're going to do and get their junk together and let's fix all this. And so we will be talking about the coming of Christ to the world next week. So if you were thinking about inviting somebody next week, it's an okay time to do it. It will not be a overly difficult kind of message that week, but one that just kind of reminds us of the hope that we have. And I hope you will be here and be a part of that. But this week, we'll look at something that may be a little bit tougher here in James chapter 2. Beginning in verse 1, my brothers and sisters, believers in our glorious Lord Jesus Christ, must not show favoritism. Must not show favoritism. Now, our world, I think, is built around the concept of favoritism in a lot of ways. I watched the Heisman Trophy ceremony last night. I don't know if any of you caught that. One of my guys was up for it, so I thought I'd watch the thing. And I really struggled with watching it because I thought to myself, I've heard all these reports that my guy's going to win, and that's great, and that's the way it should be. And yet at the same time, I watch each of these three guys, and they each perform at a level that I can't completely comprehend. They have skills that I do not have. They have physical abilities that I could only dream of. Incredible athletes. And then as I watch this story unfold, each of them seem to be pretty neat guys on top of that. Each of them, I was watching the Army-Navy game earlier in the day, and each of them was interviewed during the halftime, and they asked them if they had any pregame superstitions. And I don't know that I like the fact that they connect it to superstitions. I don't know that's the word I would use or the word they would use. But each of them said that the one thing they did before the game, and it was a common between all three, was they prayed before the game. Now, I have no idea what kinds of churches they go to, but I thought, you know, here we are in a world that Christianity is mocked, in a world that we're told that we're very different, and it was neat to see these three guys say that. And I thought to myself at that moment, I'm okay with whoever wins. Now, I still want my guy to win, but I'm okay with whoever wins, because they've all got a pretty good case for this, and now they all have impressed me with this idea. And if you didn't watch, my guy won, and it was all good. But I thought about favoritism in the midst of all this. We have our favorite teams. We have our favorite things. We have, unfortunately, sometimes, our favorite people. And then where it really starts to get difficult is our favorite kinds of people. Now, I know that within the church, hopefully we have a bond, a connection, a unity that makes us pretty important to each other and that gives us a different level. Maybe within your family, you would have something that, you know, your family kind of rises to the top. Now, hopefully within your family, it's not, well, that's my favorite kid, and this is my second favorite kid. This is my favorite niece. This is my second favorite niece. But we tend to get that way, don't we? And then when it gets to people, we start to rank people. And our culture ranks people based on money. You see it within companies. You have the Fortune 500. That comes out every year. And these are the 500 most successful companies out there. You have lists that come out every year of what people make and who the highest paid are. You have lists that come out every year of who's the highest paid actor and actress in Hollywood, who is the highest paid athlete. We used to get the Sunday paper at home all the time, and you'd have the Parade magazine that came in the Sunday paper. And every year there was a list of what people make. And you would look at that list and say, okay, I'd like to be this because that person makes this. or I don't want to be this because that person only makes this. And if you look at our society, we tend to rank people, things in that way. And James begins this section by saying to us, don't buy into what culture tells you about this. Don't assume that because this person makes this much or this person is in this position, that makes them any more important than any one of us sitting here today. That makes them any more important than somebody that just might come in here on Tuesday looking for help. That makes us any more important than anyone else around us, any of our neighbors. And then he continues, suppose a man comes into your meeting wearing a gold ring and fine clothes, and a poor man in filthy old clothes also comes in. We judge by appearances, don't we? Now, we don't want to say that we do, but too often we do. And I don't know what that is for you. For some of us, it is clothing. For some of us, it is the cars that we drive. For some of us, it is who knows what kind of crazy thing we judge each other by. As a sixth grader, I think I've mentioned to you guys before, skateboarding was real big when I was in the sixth grade. I bought a skateboard that I carried around. I lacked the coordination required to use it. It was an accessory for me, and I carried it around. And I also wore these shorts that were really big at the time, and they're called jams, and they were all like Hawaiian-looking shorts. And that's what everybody wore when they were skateboarding. It was before skateboarding was the grunge thing, and it was kind of the cool guy thing. And I was not a cool guy, nor a skateboarder, but I carried the skateboarder, and I wore my shorts, and I wore my Converse high tops and everything, and I wanted to fit in. Because in sixth grade, that's how people would judge you. And I like to think that that would stop after sixth grade, but for some reason it doesn't, does it? People continue to judge you by the house you live in, the car you drive, the clothes you wear. And it's one thing when the world around us does that, but when we start to buy into that, we have a problem. Because that is not how we are supposed to see people. We're supposed to try to see people the way that God sees people, which is very, very different than the way the world sees people. And so I would challenge us immediately to start to think, how would we react as people come in here today? How would you react if right now someone walked through the back door, nice suit, shiny shoes, beautiful dress, nice jewelry, came in, sat down next to you, just seemed like nice, good, well-to-do kind of people? And then how would you react if someone came in, ratty clothes? They came down the aisle, and as they began to come down the aisle, everyone starts to, what is that? Do you smell something? What is? And just this horrendous dirtiness about them. And they come in and they sit down and they sit down right next to you. What do you do? Now, I will say, as I was studying for this, and I've heard sermons preached on this, the associate minister where I came from preached a sermon one time about would we be comfortable around the people that Jesus was comfortable around. And he had gone through the church before everybody got there, and he had put little cards in the pews that was a person. And so as the sermon got going, he said, okay, if you're on the end of the pew, I want you to pull that card out that's sitting right there and tell me what's on it. And he walked down into the audience, and the first person, it was, you know, tax collector, because you got Matthew or you've got other Zacchaeus. The second person he got to, it was prostitute. Third person he got to, it was a homeless person. It was all these different people. And he asked these folks, what would you think if this person was sitting next to you? And I remember looking at the people and thinking to myself, I would love to watch this unfold. I would love to, instead of a card, to actually see this person and how this whole thing would work. And when I was thinking about it this morning, I thought to myself, I don't even know if I need to preach parts of this sermon. Because I have watched you in these kinds of situations and at times been blown away. Now, there are times we struggle, and I think we have to admit that. And there are different points that we struggle. I think one place that we are pretty good as a group, and if you're visiting this morning and would like to learn something about this group of people, the first appearance moment, the first judgment moment, is a pretty open moment here. We really don't make a judgment call the moment you walk in the door, from what I have seen. Now, as we start to get to know each other a little better, then we might have our moments where it's like, wow, that person just, they could just be more like me. We have the first moment we get to, and then as we get beyond that, do we start to classify people based on money, power, what they can do for us, what they can't do for us, their worth in that sense. And James says to us here, none of that stuff matters. And our world says to us the exact opposite of that. And there comes a point where we have to choose. Are we going to buy into the world's classifications, or are we going to go with something different? And then he continues, if you show special attention to the man wearing fine clothes and say, here's a good seat for you, but say to the poor man, you stand there or sit on the floor by my feet, have you not discriminated among yourselves and become judges with evil thoughts? We know discrimination in our world today, don't we? We talk about this a lot. And I think we know it to a degree out here in Oregon. I will tell you that I grew up in southern Alabama in the early 1980s. And southern Alabama in the early 1980s was still trying to not be southern Alabama in the mid-1960s. And we weren't always good at it. And every year, as school would start up again, there was a cover page on the front of the newspaper that showed you the racial breakdown of every high school in the town. Because they were still trying to get that right. And people were busing across town to get to other schools to make them more balanced. We were trying hard not to discriminate. Sometimes we get so caught up in doing this on the large scale that we forget that this is also an individual issue for us. And if it's not race and we start to feel good about ourselves, or it's not gender and we start to feel good about ourselves, there's somewhere along the way that we begin to discriminate and just assume something about a full group of people. James would say to us, every individual is a creation of God. That we don't choose based on groups this way. We don't see a poor person and a rich person come in, or I will tell you, maybe in Oregon in 2015, our struggle might be beginning to reverse this. And now it's we look at the rich differently. And so someone who is wealthy, they must have done something wrong to get there and cheated the system somehow. And how dare they have that nice a house or that big a car or any of those kinds of things. And we can very easily reverse this. Don't get too comfortable thinking, I'm poor, it's all good. No, it's about taking that whole group of people and starting to make lots of assumptions about them. So he says, don't classify people that way. Don't say you get the good seat, you get the bad seat based on this, but instead let's look at people for who they are. Listen, my dear brothers and sisters, in verse 5, has not God chosen those who are poor in the eyes of the world to be rich in faith and to inherit the kingdom he promised to those who love him? God chooses in a different way. This echoes the words of the Sermon on the Mount where you have the poor who are looked at as rich and the rich who are looked at as poor and becoming like children to inherit the kingdom. It's all upside down from what the world would tell us. It's not all about climbing this ladder and trying to get ahead. It's instead about the kind of people that we are. And God chooses people not based on what they have, not based on their status, not based on their wealth, not based on their athleticism, not based on what team they like, but on who they are. But you've dishonored the poor. It is not the rich. Is it not the rich who are exploiting you? Or are they not the ones who are dragging you into court? Are they not the ones who are blaspheming the noble name of him to whom you belong? You've dishonored the poor. And I don't know that we think of honor and poor a lot together. Those things don't seem to fit. And yet for God, that's how he thinks. The poor are people who deserve honor. I went into Fort Worth, Texas with our youth group several years ago. And we worked with an inner city organization there. And part of what they did for us was they had the, I think they called it the urban experience. And so we got to go down and see what it was like to be homeless in Fort Worth, Texas. Now, we did it for an evening. People do it for life. But what we learned was that Fort Worth has a large homeless population because they have so many organizations that help the homeless. And they have all these shelters and all these really nice things. And one of the places they took us was this mission where folks would come in and live. And I remember walking in the front door of this mission, and it was like I was walking into a nice hotel. Really nice fixtures on everything. There was like a front desk there with what would be kind of like the, I can't remember what those guys are called. Not the maitre d', but the one at the hotel. Anyway, that guy there at the front desk, there's a nice chapel area where people go to pray, and it's really well furnished and everything. They showed us a sample room, what it looked like, and it was like a really nice apartment. And I remember looking around and thinking to myself, what probably a lot of us might think in the midst of that, you know, if you didn't spend so much on this being so nice, you could probably make one twice as big. and house twice as many people. Why do it like this? And finally, one of the teenagers asked, and I was thinking, finally, somebody asked the question I didn't have to ask, and why is everything so nice here? And the guy in charge took us here. Said, you know, why because you're poor do you deserve less? And I struggled with that idea because that's not the way I was raised to think. If you're poor, you got to work for everything you get, and you can't have as nice a stuff as everybody. That's not how God operates. When we all show up in heaven, the poor and the rich, not going to matter. Not going to matter which side of it you were on down here. If we could change that mindset within ourselves, how different would the church be looked at in our community? And I think we're on the right track here, but I think we can all still do a lot better. Sometimes we make those snap judgments. Sometimes we assume something about someone based on what kind of car they get out of, based on how they're dressed. And James would say to us, put all that stuff aside and see people the way God sees people. If you really keep the royal law found in Scripture, love your neighbor as yourself, you're doing right. But if you show favoritism, you sin and are convicted by the law as lawbreakers. We think too much about, okay, I've got to do this and I've got to do this. I've got to keep these things right off the checklist. I've got to stay away from these sins. We don't think in these terms too often. Does it matter to God how I see other people? And clearly it does. Because he says when we do these things, we're convicted by the law as lawbreakers. We have got to see people in the way that God sees people. For whoever keeps the whole law and yet stumbles at it at just one point is guilty of breaking all of it. For he who said you shall not commit adultery and said you shall not commit murder, if you do not commit adultery but do commit murder, you have become a lawbreaker. Just one point. We've got the whole law, but if we miss it on just one point, then we become a lawbreaker. It's interesting to me that James chooses adultery and murder. Now, he chooses that you've done one of those or not the other of those. But I think a lot of us, when we look at those lists of sins, we'll look at these two and feel pretty good about life. I'm not doing those. I'm not killing anybody. I'm not committing adultery. And so I'm doing things well. And James will say, well, those 2 points are great, but what about loving your neighbor? What about your generosity? What about the way you talk about people? What about the way you talk to people? Just one point is enough that it gets us on the wrong track. Speak, verse 12, and act as those who are going to be judged by the law that gives freedom, because judgment without mercy will be shown to anyone who has not been merciful. Mercy triumphs over judgment. He tells us it is important how we speak and how we act. How we speak and how we act. Because how we speak and how we act will relate to how we are judged. And if we think of that, whoever that person coming through the door and how we might react as they walk down the aisle and sit down. I knew a guy that at a youth rally once, guy came in the back, biker guy. Had all the leather, tattoos, a couple piercings. Just looked rough. Had a pretty good-sized beard going before Duck Dynasty was popular. He comes walking in, doesn't say a word to anybody, just walks in the back, comes in, sits down, gets partway down, sits down in a chair. And one of the guys in there at the church that the youth rally was hosted at, getting a little nervous. Why is this, you know, this is for teenagers, what's going, this is not, why is he here, what's going on? And so he goes up and talks to the guy, and he's like, it's all right, I just want to learn about Jesus. That's why I'm here. And so the guy was, all right, I'll just let him be. And it came time for the speaker to get up. Guy in all leather gets up, walks to the front. Here's your speaker. Youth minister knew, and it was laughing the whole time. He thought it was just great. Everybody else didn't quite know what to do. And he started to talk about, what'd you think when I came in the door? Everybody getting nervous, everybody making sure that button on your wallet was buttoned, purse is a little tighter. We start to think in those kinds of ways, and that's not who we are to be. How we are to speak and to act to people matters. And it matters because that's the kind of mercy we're going to be shown. So what if God makes the snap judgments on us? What if God judged you by who you were on Black Friday? For some of us, it would be, well, you're sleepy, and okay. For some of us, it would be, you've seen the videos of people fighting over stuff. For some of us, it's just the concentration on material things. How would God judge you when Oregon is close in the last minute and you're screaming at your television? This never happens with Alabama, so I can say Oregon. How would God judge you at work when your boss has just come by with the unreasonable request and then leaves the room and it's just you talking to yourself? How would God judge you when you don't get your way? How would God judge you? So many times. He would have patience with us because that's what he does. Thank goodness that is what he does. And for us, he asks the same thing. When we speak and we act, to do it with patience, to do it with love, to do it in a way that says, this person that I am speaking about, this person that I'm acting towards, is a loved creation of God just like I am. And are they at the same place I am? Absolutely not. But does that matter in how I treat them? No. And you will find that as you begin to treat people this way and act in this way, that it is noticeable. That because of that, God's light is shown here in Eugene. So this morning, think into your own life. Do you show favorites? Are there groups of people you like better than other groups of people? Are there groups of people you want nothing to do with? Are there kinds of people that cause you to react in a way that you should not react? And if so, I think we need to begin by praying about that. Pray that God will help you to see these folks differently. Pray that God will help you to be a light. Pray that God will give you patience if that is what you need. Or maybe the humility to understand that there is somewhere, someone that puts you in a group of people too and does not have the patience for you. And somewhere, somehow, there is a group of people that looks at me and says the same thing. This morning, if we are not seeing everyone as neighbors that we need to love, we need to change that. Or this morning, if you are feeling like that unloved neighbor, we need to change that too. And we want you to know this morning that you are loved, and it doesn't take a bunch of homemade cookies to figure that out, although it's nice. But this morning, we are people who are loved by God. We are people who God desperately spent this entire book and the rest of history since then trying to bring back into a relationship with him. And for those of us here this morning who are in that relationship, it's our job to share that and to take it. For those who are not, we would welcome you in. And so if we can baptize you this morning, we're happy to do that. If there's something we need to pray about in your life or in your attitudes, we're happy to help with that. Whatever need you may have, please come as we stand and sing.